Hey, Reggie, how you doing, my friend?
Good.
Yeah, I know. My voice is a little peppy today, right? Yeah, well, I should be excited. I'm doing a podcast, right? What are you saying? Are you saying that I'm always not in a good mood? All right, let's get started here. Let's do it. While that pep and energy is still there before it gradually fades. Let's take advantage of it, Reg. All right, put it in the book. 475. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, if you like what you hear, that's good. You know, A for effort and A plus for execution for listening every week. But if you want some extra credit, if you want some good volunteer work to boost up your college resume, then don't be afraid to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are mas appreciated. And if you like what you hear, if you've been with us for many years or many months or many minutes, whatever the case may be, you can always hear lots more of this, what we've done in the past, by going to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and there they are, podcasts dating back several years. After all, we've been doing this now for more than 9 years. Find out where we've been so you know where we're going. If you like what you hear, reruns are always fun. Good is always good. That's why I've been around now for 475 podcasts. Right, this is episode number 475. We love numbers with zeros and fives. 475, 25 podcasts away from the big number 500. I don't know what that means, if that's good or bad, but it's a number, and it's got two zeros in it. Wow. Which also means, with only 25 podcasts left, that's less than a year, right? Which means that here we are. This podcast will be posting on the last day of June, the last couple of days of June, or last day of June. And wow, the first 6 months of the year are gone. 25 more podcasts. That's less than a year. We are already halfway through. I don't know about you. I know it sounds like a broken record, but this year has been flying by. Where are the first 6 months of 2025 gone? It has been such a crazy 6 months. We've had a lot happen, certainly. Strap in has really been the credo. I don't know if I said that earlier, you know, the first week of January, but wow, this is going to be a year to be remembered, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, based on your own perspective. But you cannot deny that it has been jam-packed, full of stuff, if you will. Wow. But yeah, here we are, almost halfway done, and 25 podcasts to go for number 500. So if you've been around with us for all that time, oh, hey, what do you expect? I've been here for all of them. So I want to talk about today, actually dovetails off of last week's podcast. And interesting, if it wasn't for last week's podcast, I probably wouldn't have been talking about this. And sadly, last week I was speaking about the death of Brian Wilson, one of the great songwriters and arrangers, producers in the last 50 years, if not in all time, really, the impact that he made. And I went through that in great detail in my podcast last week. But in doing some research for that podcast, I got interested in, and also, you know, and other things going around. I mean, Brian Wilson's death really, really struck me hard. And so I was feeling very nostalgic. And so I was sitting around thinking about Brian and the music. And I was like, you know, several years ago, probably my 15, if not more now, I converted my entire CD collection to my iPod, which now that sounds like ancient history. I mean, the way technology has just been moving. I mean, the idea of an iPod, and I don't even think they make iPods anymore, really, do they? I don't think they do. I don't see anybody. I mean, the only person that I see with an iPod is me. I still will bring my iPod every so often when I work out, because I've got my whole record collection on there from, at least to a, from a certain point. I mean, I can't even do it anymore, really. But I have a, you know, more than what, 24,000 songs on there. I had like 4,000 CDs, so I had a lot of songs and a lot of CDs and stuff on there. And so it's like, yeah, what do I do now? My whole collection is on this iPod. So I did actually resell at the time, several years ago. I did probably 10 years ago, if not more, once again. I did go through my CD collection, and I did sell a good number of my CDs. I just sold them to a used record store. But I did keep about half of them, really, because some of them were by my favorite artists, and some of them were very elaborate, you know, box sets and just special albums that have a great memory. So I did take my time in going through them. You know, I probably, you know, if I wasn't a real big fan, I mean, I always prided myself when I was creating my CD select, my CD collection after once again, you know, selling a lot and still keeping some of my original vinyl collection, and I'll get to that a little later. But I really felt like I would love to have a CD collection that really touches upon all types of music. And I always would say that my CD collection goes from, you know, from A to Z, you know, and it's everything. It's from punk rock to Pavarotti, you name it. It's all there. Classical, jazz, you know, rock, pop, country, soundtracks, you name it, you know, blues, gospel, the whole shooting match, if you will, the whole schmear. And I prided myself. I'm just always been a music fan. Listening to records and music was something that my mom passed on to me from a very early age. There's some songs that I don't even know why I know them. But I must have been, you know, my mom had a big record collection that, you know, I remember it was up in the attic and I found it after she died. So that was something that she enjoyed. She didn't really listen to records a lot after when I was around. In those days, it was almost like, well, now you've grown up, you don't listen to records anymore type of thing. That was that kind of mindset with that generation. But she clearly was a big fan of music and celebrities and things like that. And so even, I don't know, through osmosis, she passed that on to me. But I remember singing songs. Well, some kids were singing nursery rhymes as little kids. I was singing, you know, top 40 hits of the era. And I remember there's some songs that that just, I sort of know the words and I don't even remember why. And then I go back and I look at some of the old records. I have a lot of my 45 still. I never threw those away. And I'm like, wow, my mom bought me that. Oh, so this is why I know this song. She must have been playing it for me or playing it by herself. I don't know. But yeah, there's some songs that that will hit me from a certain era in the early 70s that I don't remember. I was very young, but they must have stuck in there in my unconscious somewhere. And so, like I said, music has just always been an important part of my life. And you know, it was when music started to get digitized, it just, you know, it just the CD was one of the first things to you know, to be victim of that. And that was funny because, of course, vinyl was the victim of the CD explosion in the mid-80s. And I've talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning again. I think it's so funny that there's this vinyl renaissance going on. It's not huge, but it's certainly more than it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago. No question about that. It's still a very niche market, but there's a lot of profit there. And there's a whole generation that never saw or experienced records. They never touched music. There's a whole generation that music was never a tangible thing for them in terms of an album. It may have been a CD, but even that, those were so small. And, you know, the whole album experience with the album art and the vinyl, and you put the needle down and you turn it over. So it's been greatly romanticized over the last 15 years or so, the return of vinyl. And I will say this forever because it is true. And no one cares, but I want to point this out, that all the people, especially the older people, people 50 and older, who tell you how great vinyl is and how it's so much better. It's warmer sounding, and it's you know, it's a better sound and all that stuff. Those people, trust me, I was one of them. I was there. I'm just honest enough to admit it. Those people who are, say, 50 or 55 and older, and over, if you will. That's the way I basically judge. Those people killed vinyl. They killed it. I don't know if they're proselytizing about it now because of their guilt before, but that age group who are now extolling the virtues of vinyl and the vinyl experience and all these, you know, esoteric things and the sound, and believe me, I get it. I remember early on, I remember in the early 90s saying to myself, wow, you know, as much as these CDs are much more convenient in terms of carrying them around, this is before songs were digitized, you know, as far as convenience to carry them, they weren't heavy. My God, albums are huge. When I was in college, I used to DJ dances and things and events, and we would carry these vinyl albums in these you know, these crates, and we had you know, 10 crates of albums. They were not light, okay? And when CDs came along, wow, what a difference. Nowadays, you see these DJs that are making, you know, $100,000 a minute, $2 million a night. Oh, where was I for that? I was on the ground floor of that. When I was doing it, nobody was paying you that much. I guarantee you that. Now they just put their phone on, plug their phone in, and they got, you know, every song in the world there. Oh, but that's not the way it was with us, man. In my day, when we used to DJ dances, we had to carry big crates of vinyl albums from the car through the parking lot into the venue and set them up and then put them on and with the needle on, and sometimes they skipped, and even when people made a request, sometimes you didn't have it, and if you didn't have it, you couldn't play it, and they were all mad at you and they called you names. Today it's impossible not to play a request. All you do is go to the search button. But in my day, you had to carry the albums, put them on, put the needle down, cue them up. Sometimes the needle bopped around if you were jumping around, if people were dancing. Sounded terrible, but we liked it. We loved it. Well, not really. Then the CDs came around, which was great. And wow, that made things easier. But my point is, in the mid-80s, the CD took the entertainment, especially the music world, by storm. That is not an exaggeration. I know if you're in your 20s or in your 30s, you in your teens, you can't even imagine this, but it was a revolution. All of a sudden, there was this little small disc, and you put it in this machine, and the machine sucked it in. It was very cool. Or you placed it on a tray, and then you hit the button, and it went in, and you don't know what it did. You weren't touching that thing anymore. And it, most of the time, it had some graphics on the front that looked like the album cover or something. And you just hit play, and that was it. Or forward or backward or fast forward. Oh, my God, you could speed through a song to a certain spot. You didn't have to guess where it was on the needle. The convenience and the hipness and the coolness of the CD was a huge selling point. And here's the thing that I love best. The CD took off and exploded, not only because of the size and the convenience of it. You hit play and it plays all the songs without, you have to get up after five songs and turn it over. It doesn't skip for the most part. Yeah, there were some times when you got a bad CD, there was a little kind of cutting it or something. There was, I mean, that happened. I mean, any kind of manufacturing thing that, but for the most part, your CD played, unlike your vinyl records, which, especially in the 70s and 80s, were made on terrible vinyl, the cheapest vinyl on earth, and there were quite a few skips when you would buy a new album. You always, the biggest thing, when you would buy a new album, your first thing, you'd open the album, you'd slit that, you know, the cellophane, you'd take it out, and you would look at it, you would hold it by its edges, and you would go under a light and you would look at it to make sure both sides that there were no scratches. Now, I don't know if they do that today. I know that most vinyl today, the vinyl is thicker, 180 milligram vinyl, whatever that is. I've seen them. I've bought some vinyl, don't get me wrong, and it's certainly much sturdier and level. But there were some albums that you bought that you could tell they were, you know, pressed by very cheap vinyl, where they would, I mean, the album was like bumpy. It wasn't flat on the turntable. So a lot of times it would even, it wasn't a skip, but the needle would jump because the vinyl was so wobbly. It's terrible. But yeah, that's the first thing you did when you bought an album, is that you would look at it under the light to make sure there were no scratches on either side. That was a big deal. Like, oh, am I going to have to take this back? Because the scratches happened enough on a new album that was a concern every time you opened it up. But not only did the CD provide a much more convenient listening experience, like I said, you hit play, you hit stop. You can fast forward between songs. You can fast forward within songs. I mean, you know, with a vinyl album, with the tone arm, you know, if you wanted to get to a certain point, you know, you'd be guessing. You'd be putting the song, you'd be putting the needle down, and it would bounce, you know. Here, if you knew, hey, go to 206 in this song and hit play, and there's the point of where it is. So the CD and the digital aspect of the CD just heightened and improved the convenience factor of listening to music. Not as bulky, not as heavy, easy to carry, easy to use, easy to play. They looked cool. Yes, the biggest drawback, of course, is, and I remember, like I said, in the early 90s, being a fan of music, being a fan of the albums that I grew up with, enjoying to when I would get an album at home back when albums were the only thing that you could buy in, you know, the 70s and 80s, at least in my era, you know, I enjoyed looking at the album covers. I enjoyed seeing the packaging and the lyrics and the art and the photos. And sometimes they would have posters in there. Sometimes they would have lyric books. As I've said many times, there were some great albums. Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy is one I've mentioned before, just because this not only was it an Elton John album, one of my favorite albums, if not my favorite album by Elton, but this thing came with a poster and three booklets. I mean, it was hefty. You know, some of the albums had gatefold, you know, folded, you know, album covers where it fold out like almost a centerfold. Those were called gatefolds. The double albums folded out three ways. Woo! You know, and so you missed that with the CD because the artwork was then shrunk down. The original artwork, when they were just recreating the artwork from previously old albums, the artwork obviously was shrunk down. You really couldn't appreciate it, and it's hard to read the lyrics. So album art during the CD era really took a back seat. And if you see a lot of CDs, especially, you know, then into the 90s and into the early 2000s, before then they started to fade away because of digitized music, most of the CDs only had like photos of the artist. So it was very simple and easy when you were in the store to pick out what album you wanted. There wasn't a lot of great attention to album art. Now that the album, vinyl albums are coming back to some extent, you know, album art is getting a little more attention than it used to. And I'm grateful. Don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-vinyl. I have vinyl. I grew up on vinyl. But what I love, there's a great hypocrisy going on here. And I don't know, as I said before, if it's the 55 and older group that just feels great guilt that they killed vinyl, and now they are making their guilt is trying to make up for it by trying to bring it back. But I, like I said, the one thing aside from the convenience, the sound quality of the CD was the selling point. Now, I don't know how they're justifying it. I'd love for them to go back and see what they said 40 years ago, because these same people were saying, wow, I bought the CD version of this album that I've been listening to for 10 years, and I never heard that instrument there at all. This sound is clean. This sound is, you know, all the instruments, you can hear them clearer and brighter, and they're popping. And what a different sound experience this CD is, this vinyl. It just had so many compromises, and there's no compromises in digital. And the music and the sound is just, it's louder and it's brighter and it's clearer and it's cleaner. And that is what sold a generation. All those people, 55 and older, they could not wait to sell their entire vinyl collection to a used record store and get half of what they paid, if that, and completely replicate and completely duplicate, as soon as they were available, the same albums that they had on vinyl on CD. The record companies couldn't believe the payday that they fell into. They never expected CDs to take off that fast. When the CD first came out, they cost like $25 a piece. And at that time, albums maybe cost $5.99, $4.99, and people were screaming about that, and CDs were costing $20 to $25 when they first came out in 83 and 84. And there weren't even that many available because there was only one CD pressing manufacturing plant in the entire world. Only one. Because they never expected it to take off like it did. But it took off because of the convenience, the newness, the hipness, but also the sound. It was determined and it was publicized and promoted that the CD sound is so much more superior. The digital sound is so much more superior than analog. And based on that, within 2 years, vinyl was passé. And in 5 years, record stores pretty much weren't even selling vinyl anymore. It was a complete revolution. And as I said, go back and watch one of the early Seinfeld episodes where Kramer and Newman go to Jerry and say, hey, if you have any of the useless, this is in the early 90s, hey, if you have any of those old, useless, heavy albums that you don't listen to anymore, they're just laying around, give them to us and we'll sell them, you know, we'll sell them to the used record store. Vinyl was passé. It was the 8-track. It was reel-to-reel. It was nothing. And then, interestingly enough, when music got so digitized and so disposable because of the Apple Store, Napster, Apple Store, Spotify, where it all music became virtual, it didn't even exist in the real world, really, except on a screen for most people, then suddenly there was this nostalgic, remember vinyl when you could hold it and touch it and look at it and study it and you put the record needle down and suddenly it was all romanticized. And the same people that killed vinyl, that couldn't wait to get rid of their vinyl, were now acting as if they had been vinyl proponents for all time and that now finally the world was coming back to them. No! The baby boomers killed vinyl. Destroyed it. And now they're trying to claim that they have, you know, reintroduced it. And I get it. It's a cool thing. But I just think there's a lot of hypocrisy going on. I don't blame younger people for going, hey, and having a vinyl collection. It's pretty cool. Yeah, I know it's cool. I grew up with it. But at the same time, those who are acting like they're the keepers of the flame, they all killed vinyl. They all killed it. They couldn't wait to get rid of their vinyl albums, replicate them, and I was one of them. But I'm not sitting there saying, "Oh, digital killed the world." I mean, that's hippie stuff. You guys killed vinyl. You did. You were in control of the culture at that time. The people that are 55 and older 40 years ago were in control of the culture. And you killed it. You killed vinyl. And now you're feeling guilty. And I think it's great. And there's nothing wrong with it that there's this new popularity in vinyl, and it's mostly younger people. I tell you, like I said, I think I may have talked about it. I went to the record store day, which this is a perfect example. Record store day is about 15, 20 years old now, I would think at least. And the whole idea was because these independent record stores were dying because music now was becoming so virtual that the industry itself came up and talked to artists and said, hey, could you help us out? We need something to draw people into our stores. We're independent business people. We've been doing this for 40 years and we're dying here. And so specific certain artists started to put out, you know, exclusive albums that would only be available on record store day to draw people in. Now that's hasn't come. It's not as exclusive as it used to be. You can buy the albums. A lot of times they'll release them a couple months later officially for everybody to get. So it's not as exclusive as it was, but there's still a great excitement, especially for music aficionados, to go on record store day. I'm one of them. If there's a newer release by, you know, one of your favorite acts, you go there. And I'll tell you, I mean, I was shocked to see the money that was being spent at my local record store. $500-$600 people with stacks of albums. So I think that's great. I have nothing against the vinyl resurgence. What I have against it are some of the older people who are acting as if now they're all high and mighty, like they're giving you, I told you so, when in fact they killed it. And I'm here to point it out. But here's the thing. So, Brian Wilson passes away. And I'm like, wow, you know, I really... So now, yeah, I mean, once again, I can go on my phone and I could pull up any album, any song, you name it, right? Why do I need to go down? I mean, as I said, I have my record collection for the in a great part is all on my iPod, which is even out of date now. I don't even use my iPod all that much, but it's there because at least those songs are there if I ever want some reference to them. But there was something, as I said with Brian, I was like, oh, you know, I wanted to post something on my Facebook page. And I was like, you know that I have Brian Wilson's autograph because I remember going when he had this album out in 1998 called Imagination was the name of the album. There's a song on there was called Your Imagination, which was really a good song. And I remember I went to a record store where they were having a record signing with Brian Wilson there. And I'll tell you, I mean, it's hilarious when you think about it. There was hardly anyone there. He wasn't all that well known, really. He had been in seclusion for so many years due to his mental problems and things like that. But they were doing a local signing here. And I was able to talk to him for a few minutes. He's very shy. I think I talked about this. But I wanted to find that album, that CD, which I know I kept because it had Brian Wilson's autograph on it. I knew I didn't sell that one. And so I basically, when I transferred my entire CD selection to my iPod, I basically, you know, took down all the cabinets and all the shelving and I put, you know, as I said, I sold some of them back, and then I basically put them in bins and I store them in the basement. And they've been there for 10 years at least. And every so often I will need a reference point or something and I will go back and I'll look it up and find them. And so with Brian Wilson, I'm like, oh, you know, I know that I've got this Brian Wilson autographed CD somewhere in there. And of course, when I first, you know, started to store these CDs, I did them in a very organized way, alphabetically and everything like that. I had the letters even on the bins. Well, now 10 years have gone by. I've gone through them looking for things. You know, you're in a rush, haphazard. The labels have fallen off. So it's not as well organized as it used to be because I rarely go down there to go through them. I don't play them anymore. There's no more CDs in new cars. That's been at least 4 years. No more CD players in cars. That's gone. I mean, wow. That was a major deal. I remember in 1990, there were no CDs in cars. No CD players in cars in 1990. Now, I had all these CDs, right? Already. I mean, like I said, I was a very early adopter, as was everybody. The CDs exploded. I remember getting a new car in 1990, soon after I got married. And one of the reasons that I went to this dealership, this specific dealership, was because they had a special deal that you, if you bought or leased a car from them, they would give you a free CD system in the car. Now, here's the thing. This is how, I mean, when you think about what we used to do, and it wasn't all that long ago, right? I mean, that's 35 years ago. It's a long time for some, but it's not a long time for many. 35 years ago, within 35 years, the CD player in a car went from not being in it to now not being in it. It had a pretty much a 35-year lifespan. And I know that because I bought this car in 1990, and the new cars did not have a CD player installed in the factory radio. This was a separate CD player with a magazine, they called it. You put five CDs in this square box, and then you loaded that, and they to give you a CD player in your car in 1990, you had this big giant unit that they put it in your trunk. They screwed it in to the corner of your trunk, and they ran a wire underneath, you know, from the trunk through the back seat and the floor, and there was a small little fob right by, you know, the gear shift, and then you would put the radio on auxiliary or something, and then you would have access to the thing. But it wasn't an in-dash CD. It was a portable CD player that they kind of configured to put in a car. That was 1990. And here in 2025, and it's been at least 4 to 5 years now, if not more, you can't even find a CD player in a new car. Not even there. Unbelievable. And so here I am saying, okay, I know I've got this Brian Wilson CD that I want to get. Because I want to take a picture of it and put it on my, you know, show on my Facebook page. So I go down into the bins, if you will, and I'm looking to see, and I'm hoping, I mean, like I said, all the labels fell off. I don't know where the W's will be. I don't even know if they're in alphabetical order anymore. But boy, did I get lucky, because there's several bins of these CDs, and I got very lucky. In my first bin, there it was. And so as I was going through the bins to find this Brian Wilson CD, I started to go through the CDs, you know, one by one, as if I was in a record store. Like they were in the bin at a record store. Just like you finger through the vinyls now at a record store. Well, they used to do that in the record store with CDs too. You'd go through them. They weren't stacked. They were flat, and you would go through them. And I started to see some of these CDs by some of my favorite artists, and like I said, some of these elaborate box sets. And all of a sudden, I was like, "Oh wow! Oh wow! Oh look at! There's all my Beatles CDs, and there's some Bob Dylan. Oh boy, I used to listen to this. Oh no, that." And it was so funny, because suddenly I was getting nostalgic for my CDs. And so I found the Brian Wilson CD that I wanted, the autographed one, fairly quickly. And I was thankful, because I didn't really want to go through, you know, eight bins of CDs to find this thing. Because there were two levels of them. You know, it's one of those bins that you buy at the store that you store things in. And so there was like two levels, you know, of CDs. There was a lot of CDs in one of these. I mean, those bins are pretty heavy. That's why I slide them around the floor. I don't pick them up. They're very heavy. They're probably heavier than those crates I was telling you about that I had my old vinyl albums in. But I'm sitting there, and I'm going through, and then so I found the Brian Wilson CD relatively quickly. So I'm like, okay, cool. But then I'm like, let me take a look. It's been, what, 15 years now, 10 years since I've really looked at these things? And I sort of got nostalgic for them. I sort of missed them to the point where I was taking out the bins and physically now looking through them. Oh, that's right. Oh, there's that one. Oh, there's all the, well, oh, that's right. I had all of their, yeah, that, okay, well, I kept all those. I knew who I kept, what artists I kept, because they were all my favorite. And I had every album by those people, you know. So, I mean, my Beatles bin or my Springsteen bin is, you know, or my Elton, you know, well, the Elton ones I still have displayed. Those are the only ones. And there's a ton of those CDs. But I don't really play those anymore. They're more for show. But I'm going through the CDs, and it brought back the same nostalgia and the same kind of warm, fuzzy feeling, because this is more than 40 years ago. And I remember buying these CDs, and I remember, you know, my CD my CD collection. At 4,000 CDs, all against a wall with, you know, in bookcases or casings, you know, with shelves. And there was a very specific way that I had them displayed. They were alphabetical by group or artist. And the order they were put in was most recent on the left, and then they went down toward the right. So the newer CD by a band would go to the left, and then they were in chronological order as they were released. It was, and I sometimes would go there and say, oh, wait a minute, this is in the wrong spot. I have to move it one over. Oh, no, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, I mean, I was very, you shouldn't be surprised if you listen to me. You know how I am, a little OCD on that. But but yeah, my collection was very well organized and displayed. It started with groups or artists with an A. Of course, the A would be their last name, or the A would be the group's first name. So you would have, you know, Tony Bennett would be after the Beatles. They'd still be in the B's, but Bennett and Beatles, B-E-A-B-E-N. So Beatles would be before Tony Bennett. Bennett with the B, that's the way it would go. Then we went through, when it went to Z, then it started with compilations, and then soundtracks, movie soundtracks based on the title alphabetically, the title of the movie. That's the way the soundtracks were. Then I had a group of classical and opera. The other things like country and jazz and blues, those were within the regular collection. But the classical and the opera I put on its own with the soundtracks and the compilations. Oh, it was all very, very well organized. I loved it. I mean, you know what? I don't even think I should have taken a picture of it. It was quite a sight. And it, you know, now that you know, I can't replicate that because I did sell a great deal of them, but I still have my favorites. And I was going through this, and then, like I said, then there were some box sets, and I'm looking at, you know, the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon, you know, 40th anniversary or 30th anniversary, whatever it was, and there's, you know, all the CDs, and then there's booklets and posters and the box and the cover art, and that's where. I mean, the box sets are where the CD collector then got a chance to get to revisit that album before the vinyl revolution, the box set was kind of like this, hey, we're going to recreate the original album art. And you're going to have a booklet and things. And so they sort of brought in some of the tactile things of the vinyl world back into the CD world with the box sets. And that seemed to please us a lot. And that helped us buy the box sets, even if they were just remastered versions, or, you know, they would have bonus tracks and things like that. But then you did want to get this box set. There was some kind of exclusivity to that. Oh yeah, the record companies, they always know how to entice the real audiophile, if you will. We just love our albums. We love our music. We love our album covers. We love that stuff. And so that was one reason why I couldn't get rid of all of them, because I still had a connection to them. I still have a great deal of my vinyl collection. Once again, I kept some of my favorite albums, you know. But yeah, you know, those were touchstones of my youth. And now I see so many of these albums that I had now for sale, remade. And you know, they cost $32 and I paid like $3 or $4 or $5 for them. So like I said, I have nothing against the vinyl revolution, but my real point is, while everybody is crowing about vinyl, I got to tell you, I when I found the Brian Wilson CD that I wanted to get a picture of, I was going through these other bins and I found some CDs, and I still have a CD player in my stereo rack. And I even have a radio, a CD radio, clock radio, that, you know, nice kind of Bosch thing that was from the, you know, 2000s. Still works great. And so I can play CDs in there. And I was like, you know what? I know that I can just, you know, pull all these songs out in this album on my phone. But with that same kind of tactile thing, certainly not as big and not as elaborate as the vinyl CD, but the same, it brought back this listening experience for me for the CD. Because I was playing CDs for so many years. And it was an obsession with me for a good period of my life. Buying CDs, a new CD is out. Even when a new album, even when a new release comes out today, I do not buy the vinyl version. I buy the CD version. If it's not by Elton or Bruce Springsteen, I will not buy the vinyl version. I'm just a completist in that standpoint. But if there's a new album out by somebody that I really want, I will buy the CD version if they still make them. And they still seem to make them, which is good. And I buy the CD version. Now, I don't know how often I really even play it after the initial, because for the most part, you just pull it on your phone. But if it's by an artist that I really like, that from a collecting standpoint, I will buy the CD version. Like, for instance, there's just been a box set. We love our box sets. Of Bruce Springsteen just released a huge box set called Lost, or Tracks 2, the Lost Albums. And it's seven albums from, 1983 through, I think, 2018, that full albums that he never released. He made them, and then he didn't feel that they were right for the time, and he never released them. And they were always these stories about these lost albums. Well, now they're not lost anymore. So, of course, when they decide to release them, I mean, Bruce is 75, you're going to release these things. You better release them now, you know? Take advantage of this. And, of course, the people that have bought his catalog for $500 million want to start to make some money, too. So there's this huge box set, and it comes with 7 CDs or 9 vinyl albums. Now, that 9 vinyl album set has to weigh a ton. But like I said, I bought this because I'm a completist, but I didn't buy both. That would be outrageous. I mean, this thing was close to $300, 7 albums. But I bought the CD version, not the vinyl version. Bought the CD version. I'm still loyal to my CDs. I grew up with the vinyl, but I'm still loyal to my CDs over the vinyl. You'd think it would have been the other way around, but no. Because the CDs came out, even I've been buying records since I was 5 or 6, okay? But when the CDs came out in the mid-80s, I was in my teens. And so that also is my youth. So I kind of, you know, because I was at such a young age, I was already into music at a young age. I actually got a chance to get both of those experiences, the vinyl experience and the CD experience. And now, of course, the digital experience. But when I'm going back from a nostalgia standpoint, I'm still saying that the CD, in my view, it's to me, it's preferable. It's smaller. It's more convenient. You hit play. I mean, okay, there's 83 songs on this Bruce Springsteen collection, right? 83 songs over 7 albums. Okay, if I'm going to listen to those 9 albums, I'm going to be up and down every 15 minutes. As opposed to putting in the CD, hitting play, and I got 45 minutes of continuous music. And if I have a remote control, I can repeat it and shuffle it and do whatever I want with it. And there might be something to the point, oh, you know, the musicians, and they're all about the analog and da da da, and it's a warmer sound. Those same engineers, those same artists couldn't wait to put out a digital album. Those engineers couldn't wait to swap out and get digital equipment. All those gray-haired guys with the ponytails who will tell you how great vinyl is and how great analog is. And I'm not saying that there's not some nice aspects of it, but those same people couldn't wait to get rid of their analog boards and get digital equipment and go nuts. They loved it. They thought it was great. Now they're bemoaning it. Oh, it's sterile, and it's flat sounding, and it's not warm. 40 years ago, they were like, it's clean, it's bright, it pops. You can hear instruments in you could hear the whole variety of instruments. They're not buried in the mix. Oh, you couldn't wait to hear the way they were playing up the sound advantages of digital music in the 80s. And they couldn't wait to get rid of their vinyl. So at least I'm not being hypocritical. To the point is, I don't know, I don't carry much clout in this whole scheme of things. I understand that. But I have to tell you, thanks to Brian Wilson, and not to say thanks to his passing, but thanks to Brian Wilson's memory, I'll put it that way, thanks to Brian Wilson's impact on me and his memory, I was forced to go, I was driven, I was inspired to go back to my CD collection to find a CD. And in the midst of that, sort of found a new appreciation, a new nostalgic warmth for my CD, my CD collection. It's still tangible. I remember buying these CDs. Yeah, it doesn't have the same thing. Oh, you put the needle on, but no, you know what? You put it in to the tray or into the slit there, and you hit play or shuffle or repeat. You don't have to get up. It keeps playing. The sound is in my view, it still sounds good. I think if you know, the warmth thing, I get that. But you have to have some really, really good stereo systems to really feel that warmth that they're all talking about. Most of the musicians and engineers, that's what they have in their homes. That's what they work in. Most of us are playing music off our phones. As I said many times, we are a convenience society today. And so, I might be a one-man protest. I might be a one-man advocate. But I, right now, today, on podcast number 475, there's some importance to it. It's got a five at the end. 475. On podcast number 475, I am officially announcing the return of the CD. Bring back the CD. Bring back the compact disc. Bring back the ease and the convenience and the play and the shuffle and the rewind and the fast forward and the pause and the stop. Bring back the cool design on the front of the disc. Bring back the convenience and the easy storage and the easy handling. Bring back the CD. If vinyl can make a comeback, so can the compact disc. Brian Wilson, thank you. Not only for your great legacy of music, but thank you, Brian Wilson, for making me rediscover, reappreciate, and fall in love again with my CDs. Guess what? I'm taking the bins out of storage. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 475. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears, CDs rule.